podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Tony Cotty, and you're listening to the We Are West Ham podcast.
You are listening to the We Are West Ham podcast with me, Will Pugh, and James Jones. And this season, the We Are West Ham podcast is sponsored by Miriam Errington Conveyancing in Adelaide, South Australia. So if you are buying or selling a property in Adelaide, South Australia, or Australia as a whole, make sure you keep West Ham business in the West Ham family by giving Miriam a call or a shout. It's Miriam Errington Conveyancing for all your property sale and conveyancing needs down under. And so begins the collapse. West Ham United out of Europe against Bayer Leverkusen after a valiant attempt at home at London Stadium on Thursday before the oh-so-embarrassing shambles at Selhurst Park as we crashed 5-2 to Crystal Palace and all but kissed goodbye to our already waning European hopes, or hopes of qualifying for Europe for a record fourth season running. Many will have you believe that it's the end of an era. Stories coming out since the game about West Ham targeting potential replacements for David Moyes, Ruben Amorim and Julen Lopetegui have got tongues a-wagging, particularly among the staunch Moyes out brigade, which is a brigade that seems to be growing rapidly in its membership base week on week. It's all feeling a little bit post-Leon, isn't it? A couple of years ago after our, you know, many of our, not just our season, but our lives peaked away at Leon with that famous Europa League quarterfinal victory in France, after which we didn't win a game in any competition for the rest of the season because we hadn't invested in January. The squad was too small, and that almost feels exactly what's happening now. The defeat against Bayer Leverkusen over the two legs, obviously capped off with that 1-1 draw at London Stadium. Realistically, I think it's sort of, you know, a bit of an injustice that they got, you know, the jammiest equaliser in history. If I didn't know better, I'd say that we were playing Tottenham rather than Bayer Leverkusen. Such was the amount of luck involved in their equaliser. But a heroic performance from West Ham. But it's just proven, isn't it, that we haven't got the squad depth, be it quality or just numbers, to compete at the business end of the season. And, you know, me and James have gone head to head on whether West Ham's beginning of the season or the way it's panned out was good enough. And when you're going to build such solid foundations, it all does seem a little bit of a waste of time if, when it comes to the business end, i.e. April and into May, you've left yourself short of the required amount of fresh legs, I suppose, is the answer, to see it over the line and turn a very good season into a historic one. Obviously, David Moyes managed to do that with the Conference League last year, but you do sense that was A, at the behest of any Premier League form, and B, obviously the quality of opposition deep into that competition was lower than we came up against Bayer Leverkusen. All a bit of a shame. Season's over. David Moyes' era at West Ham, you would think, is over. We'll go into that in a little bit more detail later on. And it was kind of the week, James Jones, was it not, of season collapses. Liverpool seemed to throw the title race away, also bowed out of the Europa League, which kind of made it all that bit more disappointing that we went out, because you fancied a Liverpool-less Europa League would have had far more of a chance of doing something amazing in. Since it's Leverkusen's to lose. Now, Arsenal tended to, they threw the title race away as well, even though in my eyes they weren't really in it. That defeat against Aston Villa, I don't know, just all a bit, and so ends. Another season that was promising. It appears, according to lots of people, that David Moyes' era is over as well. How are you? How are you feeling? What do you make of it?
Do you know what? After Thursday, kind of saw it coming in terms of didn't really think we'd get a result. So saw us going out coming. But I can't remember the last time I walked out of a ground after being knocked out of a competition and still feeling pretty happy about what I've just watched.
Yeah.
Fast forward 3 days, 4 days, whatever you want to call it. And I've never been so embarrassed to concede 5 goals to Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace. Like, it's embarrassing. I heard a lot of people go, oh, yeah, well, they're all tired from Thursday night. No.
Although they are.
Yeah, they're probably tired. And they put in one hell of an effort against Bayer Leverkusen on Thursday. And we all stood, well, the majority of us stood at the end of the game, and we clapped them off, quite rightly so, for their efforts. But Aston Villa did 120 minutes and a penalty shootout, and 9 of their starting 11 against Bournemouth at the weekend played those 920 minutes. They went and won the game. They played pretty well and got 3 points at the weekend. We just why did we bother turning up? What's the point? It's just like, if we lost 2-0, I would have gone, yeah, okay. But to concede 5, what, 4 in the first 31 minutes, it's not acceptable at this level. It's a bit of a bitter end to what has been an incredible 4 years. I see no scenario in which David Moyes is manager of West Ham next season. A lot of us saw it coming. I've been saying it for weeks. It's not going to end the way that we all want it to end, because the squad isn't big enough. It's just too thin to be able to compete at this stage of the season across all fronts. And we're now paying for the second time in 3 years, an absolutely shambolic piece of business in the January transfer window, and we're paying for it. It's sad. It's sad that David Moyes is going to probably bow out under a cloud of toxicity amongst the fan base, because I don't think that's what he deserves. In fact, he's definitely not what he deserves, given what he's achieved. But yeah, it's just a little bit rubbish now. Like, we're going to finish 9th, and it's just all that hype before Christmas has just been killed. But at the same time, we should probably be a little bit excited for what could be another exciting project and era coming. We don't know. It depends on who gets appointed, doesn't it?
Well, listen, one thing I can tell you, James, is that that ultimately, David Sullivan still hasn't made his mind up about David Moyes.
No.
That much I know to be true. There's pressure on him from within the club to, if David Moyes is going, to announce it before the Luton game, in order that us West Ham fans, whichever side of this stupid in-out divide that has appeared over the past, well, between the last 2 months to 18 months, depending who you talk to. So in order that all of us can give him the hero's send-off that he damn well deserves. But ultimately, there's hesitancy on David Sullivan's part as to whether to let him go. Now, that bit I know to be true. This bit is sort of my own opinion on why that is. And it's because David Moyes has been superb at papering over the cracks that exist in the way West Ham is set up as a club, which obviously comes from the top in David Sullivan. David Sullivan knows that if David Moyes goes and it doesn't work out the next appointment, that the heat is back on him. Everyone knows that. And listen, you and me both know, James, that and I know you're sort of what side of the fence you sit on, and you are sensible enough and articulate enough to add in the necessary amount of nuance when you say you think it's time for a change and you want David Moyes to go. But the fact of the matter is that if it doesn't go well post David Moyes, which there's a chance of, I'm not saying that's 100% going to happen, but there's a chance that happens, a la Pellegrini, that all of these people crying out for David Moyes to go, they're not going to suddenly turn into virtuous, patient people giving the club the benefit of the doubt for trying and giving them credit. David Sullivan knows that as well. And all the heat will be back on him. He's had a little bit of a break. As long as David Moyes has been manager this second spell, David Sullivan's been able to have a breather from, you know, pretty much years of constant grief from supporters. Lots of it deserved, undoubtedly. But whilst no one's tripping over themselves to give him credit for the success we've enjoyed over the last three seasons, it has also seen fans lay off of him. So I can totally understand why he's like in a sort of period of doubt at the moment. I think that that period of doubt, whatever happens, might prove to be the undoing of next season and beyond. And look, we'll talk about we'll do the manager stuff sort of up front, I think, Jonesy, and then we'll sort of look into the games, because we're at that point of the season, and we have been recently anyway, where the games also become, like, game to game become quite insignificant, because it's at a time of holistic change for West Ham and it's important. And I think the story, if you like, is at where West Ham sit, bigger picture, isn't it? You know, what direction we go in. All right, the defeat to Palace is embarrassing. We'll talk about it. We'll break it down. We'll look at the goals a bit later on. But ultimately, it pales into insignificance, doesn't it? When you compare it to the general enormous crossroads West Ham find themselves at as a club. But yeah, so I can totally understand why David Sullivan is sort of dragging his heels on it at the moment. But one thing that, you know, I totally understand why he feels like that, because it would be throwing away the club's most successful manager of the modern era, and a huge level of risk bringing someone in and starting a new project. He's already been burnt with Pellegrini. I get it. One thing I won't forgive him for is if David Moyes does end up, as you put it very well there, slipping out through the back door. And as a fan base, we don't get to absolutely hero worship him out the door. Not, you know, glossing over, pretending things haven't been bad, but the man deserves that, at the very least, from a fan base who regularly give managers and players hard times if they don't feel they're pulling their weight. But I'll be bereft and really sad. And exactly as you say, that will bring to an end and the curtain down on what's been such a wonderfully fantastic era. If it happens in that fashion, as we have seen a couple of times before, I think it was James Collins, deserved a send-off. Lanzini's, I remember being a little bit sad about the way Lanzini ended up going and that more wasn't made of that. You know, I've been criticised in the past as a club for sort of not treating our legends very well, or sometimes during, but certainly after their, you know, periods of prolonged hard work and effort that's borne success for our club. I don't want to see that happen again.
No, he has to just almost swallow his own pride, David Sullivan, and just go, yeah, let's do it. And you'd like to think as well, because I do wonder whether David Moyes is even considering it, considering whether he's interested in signing a new deal now, because he will know how spit the fan base is, and he will know the limitations on him at the moment. Like the fact that January didn't go, in fact, it went terribly. He will know he would have had a part to play in that. I don't think it's 100% his fault. But he'll probably be looking at it going, am I going to have to do another 2 years of this where, you know, I've got to work with a small squad, which he likes doing.
Which he wants.
But then when I want to improve in January, there may be limitations there from upstairs, X, Y, Z. Then he's going to end up being the fall guy, which he's currently the fall guy now for that. And he must be looking at it going, well, and if I was him.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Is he going to get any better? Is he genuinely going to improve us beyond where he's taken us now? I'm not saying this very moment, this very position that we're in, but what he achieved last season and the 2 years prior to that. And I think if he actually looks deep within himself, I think the answer is probably not. I think everyone can see it. I think we have hit a ceiling under his stewardship. And I just really don't think even he's going to be that interested in taking on another 2 years after what's happened over the last 4 months.
£6 million a year might change your mind. Do you know what I mean?
It might do, but I mean, it's not like he needs any more of it, is it really? And I don't know. I just think if I was him and I'd made up my mind, I'd be going to David Sullivan going, can you announce it, please? Because I want to send off on against Luton on Saturday. Mm. And I want to be able to say goodbye.
He doesn't strike me as that sort, do you think?
No, probably not. Maybe not, but I just think, regardless of what way Sullivan's thinking, and I do agree with you, but he's not really going to win either way, because he either does it, he either gives people the heads up and go, look, he's going to go, you can give him a send-off, and then risk it all coming back on top of him when if the next appointment doesn't work out. Mm. Or he can give David Moyes a new contract. And I think there's a large percentage of the fan base now that, regardless of how they portray their feelings towards David Moyes and their want for him to go, it will come on top of him then. I think it's gone too far now where the club can even consider giving him a new contract because of the position that we now find ourselves in.
Mm.
That it wouldn't make any sense for David Sullivan to go. Do you fancy another 2 years, Dave? All right.
Mm.
I think we've gone too far. If they'd done that back in February, when form wasn't great, but we were still in Europe, we were still pushing for top seven, and gone right.
It was after the Arsenal win, the story came out, weren't it?
Here's your 2 year deal. Sign on the dotted line, and then put it to bed. And then that way, now, if that happens, we're all going, all right, we've got a big summer ahead. David Moyes has got to get the players in. We go again next season. We've got 2 more years of this. It's okay. Yes, we've flopped at the final hurdle this year, but we go again next year. We know David Moyes can do it. But now it's like fans are going, I don't care whether we know David Moyes can do it. Just want him gone because, like, you know, I just don't feel as if he can do it. Whereas before,
no,
I don't know. I think they missed the boat on it. And I think either way, David Sullivan will come on top of him if it doesn't work out with a new manager. Or if he does offer David Moyes a new contract, because if it goes into next season, and we said it last year after the Conference League win, if I was David Moyes, I'd resign. I'd walk after winning that trophy. You know,
yeah,
rather die a hero than live long enough to become the villain. Look what's happened. He chose the latter, and he's now.
Yeah, but he's not a villain. Well, he's not a villain. He's a villain in your eyes and some people.
He's not a villain in my eyes. Not a villain in my eyes whatsoever. I tweeted this in the week.
Yeah, in some people's eyes, but he's a hero in mine and loads of other fans' eyes.
Yeah, in my eyes as well. But he has become a villain to large sections of the fan base. And there's no getting away from it. There's no getting away from it. And even
mate, that section of the fan base will find villainy in anyone. Of course.
But I said it last year. After that, I was like, if we go into this season and it goes terribly, then we don't want Moyes to end up going mid-season or be sacked or whatever, because it will kind of almost tarnish some of the legacy that he's built at the club. If he offers him a new contract and he takes it, there's a risk of that happening midway next season.
I understand what you mean, yeah.
And I just think the club have just got, they've both got to shake hands, agree that time's up, had an unbelievable 4 years in the club's history. everyone can acknowledge that, regardless of whether you're in or out David Moyes, you can acknowledge that the last 4 years have been absolutely wonderful for everyone. But there's also, there's no reason, just because of that doesn't mean to say it's always going to be like this. And we have to sometimes just take a step back and go, okay, it was a great era. It was a wonderful time. We've got unbelievable memories to take with us away from it. But now it's time for something a little bit different. And there's no harm in that. And you can do that, but also look into David Moyes' direction and thank him and go, you know, you're a hero. You're a legend because what you've given us came completely out of the blue. No one expected the last 4 years to happen. And the memories we've got. And we've got a trophy and we've been able to see in our lifetime West Ham win a major trophy. And I will forever love the man for giving that to us. But I think it is time for change. And I don't see any way out for David Sullivan or David Moyes on that
front. Well, but the thing is that first of all, I think actually it would be more in David Moyes' interest to leave, but as in that what you're saying there, that it's sort of the right time to leave. I feel like that's probably more understandable if David Moyes felt that way, because within the environment and the parameters within which and the boundaries within which he's forced to work at West Ham, you know, that is, let's call it as it is, swear warning coming up, but it's a bit of a batshit crazy football club, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like David Sullivan, he's pretty unique among Premier League owners. Like the bloke's a pawn baron. That's where he earned a lot of his money. He's very sensible investments in property and major landmark, places in London now as well. It's obviously not where he makes all of his money from anymore, but a very prudent businessman. Let's not take that away from him. But there are still traits of his character like all over that club and with the way it's run. Put it this way, you're not dealing with a man there who, you know, unlike you see at, say, like some of the other clubs who are run by royal families, or they're run by people who come from obscenely wealthy families and have always gone to the best schools and were like bred to be CEOs of big hedge funds and all that sort of stuff. This is a man who, you know, has made good, has made himself money. He's dragged himself up from, you know, opportunities compared to lots of his peers that none of them had. Whether or not you sort of find the way he did it or the industry in which he did it particularly tasteful or not, it's kind of by the by, really, right? He's made a huge financial success, at least, of his life, which many other people, you know, as did David Gold, which many other people who grew up in similar circumstances could probably only dream of, right? But with that, and I'm not detracting from him, I'm just being objective. With that comes, you know, some quirky, intriguing, questionable practices and business practices and personality traits. And those things have effects. Like it's a top-down thing, right? At Manchester United at the moment, the reason the malaise they're in, it's a top-down thing. It's culture. It comes from the very top. The same thing happens at West Ham. So regardless of who the manager is, the general setup is a bit unique and it's a bit chaos and it's a bit mad and it's a bit of a reflection of David Sullivan's personality, right? So with that, without the fact is David Moyes has helped West Ham as a club punch above their weight in the past few years. So it would kind of make sense to me if Moyes was to go, you know what, I think I've taken the club as far as I can take them. I'd be like, yeah, you probably have, mate. And what that means is not because West Ham, because of the size of the fan base, shouldn't be bigger. Because as much as us fans like to think that matters, ultimately it doesn't really. The success of a club, that's a part of it, the passion and the size of the fan base. But as we saw with Newcastle when Mike Ashley was there, and conversely, the other end of that scale, as we see with Brentford, or perhaps Brighton, far smaller fan bases and far less passionate. The thing that matters is the manner in which the club is set up and run. Mm-hmm. So all fans of Moyes in or Moyes out need to acknowledge that a huge contributing factor to the success of any club is the manner in which it's run and the people by whom it's run and the framework behind any manager. Like, we're not living in the 80s and the 90s anymore, and the era of Sir Alex Ferguson and Arsene Wenger and Brian Clough and myriad managers before that, where they're managing, they're in charge of the whole club and they're spending the money. They decide who they buy. They decide the tactics and all of that sort of stuff. It's just not how it works anymore. The manager's role is far more limited. So given the club that David Moyes was trying to steer through the waters we've sailed through in glorious fashion in the last two or three years, like, given the nature of the ship, if you like, and the state of the ship that he was trying to sail, he has done an incomprehensibly amazing job. Yeah. And so therefore, if you're the ship maker, i.e. David Sullivan, this is one of my best analogies, by the way, James. If you're the ship maker, i.e. David Sullivan, and you know the captain has done an outstanding job of making your ship look a lot better and a lot more seaworthy than it actually is, of course you'd have doubts. But if you're the captain, whose reputation as a result of driving that ship, as far as in the wider football world goes, a couple of the crew members on your actual ship might be a bit disgruntled, but if you actually dig into it, they probably don't know much about boats anyway. But the wider seafaring industry, i.e. football fans as a whole, can see that David Moyes' reputation as a captain has been like irrefutably improved as a result of his time at the helm. And I would understand if he walked away, because, all right, there might not be Premier League clubs particularly queuing up to give him a job, particularly in the top half. I understand that. But you can't tell me that, I don't know, if something happened at Wolves or Everton. I mean, Everton screams a return for David Moyes if they can stay in the Premier League this year. And Everton, a Wolves, a Nottingham Forest, you know, even a Crystal Palace have obviously taken on Glasnow, who seems to be doing okay. But you can't tell me David Moyes couldn't get a job at one of them clubs. That's fine, right? The future looks brighter than it does. But for David Sullivan, like, no wonder he's dragging his heels and no wonder he's hesitant. And look, we'll wrap up this intro section and we'll dig into what the world might look like after David Moyes in its section of its own next. But all of these big name managers, Ruben Amorim, great. I've been talking about him on a podcast for a long time, saying he's the sort of manager I could conceive going, all right, yeah, it's time for a change. Whether he comes or not, who knows? Lopetegui, if you think he could, like, he walked away from Wolves on a matter of principle because he was misled by their owners. If you think he would get on well with David Sullivan, fair enough. If that's what you think, fair enough. I personally doubt that. The risk factor is far higher for David Sullivan at the moment than it is for David Moyes to do that, right? It's time for a change, because there's so much more at stake for him. Money and his own reputation, West Ham standing in the division and on the European stage. So, long old introduction here, but I know people are hating to be careful what you wish for at the moment. It's not that. I can just understand why David Sullivan is being careful about acting on the wishes of a loud section of the West Ham fans at the moment. That's it for the intro. Me and James are going to talk about managers next. Ruben Amorim, Julian Lopetegui have been mentioned. There's been news stories about both of those this week after that defeat at Crystal Palace. And we will look back briefly on the Bayer Leverkusen games and the Palace games as well before a brief look ahead to the weekend's game at Liverpool, even though it does really feel like whatever else happens this season doesn't really matter, because you're not really sure if we've got anything left in the legs or perhaps the minds to limp over the line and somehow qualify for the Europa Conference League next season. Don't forget, follow us on social media. We are West Ham Pod on Instagram at we are underscore West Ham, excuse me, on Twitter. You can find mine and James's personal accounts on both of those platforms as well. Send us an email if you want. We are West Ham Pod at gmail.com. Follow us or subscribe to our YouTube channel. That's the one I always forget. Please do that. A couple of the more recent videos doing very well indeed. So follow us over there. Send us an email. I've said that one already. wearewestendpod@gmail.com. Buy us a pint if you want at buymeacoffee.com/wearewestend. If you like what we've done this season, then yeah, get on over there and chip in if you fancy it. The pints are a fiver each. You can buy as few or as many as you like. The money goes directly to me and James. We only ever spend it on beers over the bar or travel arrangements, equipment, podcast equipment, licensing fees, whatever it might be, to make the show better for you guys and bring you content from all over the place. That's about it, I think. Oh, you can follow us on, no, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify as well, and some nice words. That's it for the intro. Stay with us. Manager, potential Moyes replacement review next, plus some look backs at the Leverkusen and Palace games, and a sort of nervous look ahead to Liverpool. All that with us. Stay with us next. Right, James, well, I think we've sort of laid out our stool where we sit as far as David Moyes goes. And I don't know. I don't know whether it feels like it's the end. There is still some, yeah, as we've covered, hesitancy from David Sullivan. But it just feels like I sort of agree with you now. It just feels untenable, really. I think there'll be a bit of a general lack of excitement around some of the fans about what's to come next season. And although many of us still feel David Moyes our best chance of Europe, many, as you say, don't. And yeah, I don't feel like, if we don't get into Europe, if we don't qualify for the Conference League, then I think it's fine. You're free to roll the dice then. I think Sullivan's free to roll the dice on another sort of try at something a bit different. He's free to do it. You never know. We can always bring David Moyes back for a third spell if it was Pete Tong like it did under Manuel Pellegrini. But stories this week, Jonesy, Ruben Amorim was the one that sort of kicked it all off. Our friend of the show and esteemed colleague, Sun Sports West Ham correspondent Jack Rosser, who's got his finger on the pulse with all things Hammers, and I know for a fact that he's got some very well-placed sources in and around the club, and he's normally spot on with those sort of things. He had mentioned to me, funnily enough, the Ruben Amorim tale before David Ornstein from The Athletic published it yesterday. Jack then backed that up with some additional sort of information of his own. Amorim was in London earlier this week, depending when you're listening to the podcast. Yeah, he was in London earlier this week on Monday. Me and Jonesy sort of just pushed the recording back a little bit this week in order to let some of those stories develop. Then the Lopetegui stuff came out after that. I am led to believe that Amorim had a meeting with David Sullivan in London. And there's reports from Portugal suggesting the meeting didn't go very well. I've read some other stuff that says the numbers offered are said to be higher than what Liverpool are offering him. And there's some real consideration on Amorim's part. Again, these are conflicting reports we've received. There's some willingness on Amorim's part that he likes the look of the project at West Ham, and there's a bit of hesitancy on taking on the post-Klopp Liverpool, very much to how Unai Emery struggled to do at Arsenal post-Wenger, and David Moyes, our very own David Moyes, struggled to do at Man United post-Fergie. James, I suppose just straight off the bat then, really, what are your thoughts on those stories when they came out and those sort of, you know, potential appointments, if it is, as it feels more and more likely, David Moyes' last season in charge at West Ham?
Well, I'm not gonna sit here and pretend that I know a great deal about Amorim, because I don't, if I'm quite honest. So when those reports were breaking yesterday, on Monday, I did a little bit of research, so look about and sort of consume some of the opinions of people that actually know what they're talking about, and came to the conclusion that it does appear that it would be some sort of coup if we were to manage to bring him to the club. Presumably plays the style of football that large sections of the fan base have been demanding for many years.
Can you stop saying large and just saying loud, please?
Well, it is. Oh, okay, loud sections of the fan base. I do believe it is a large section of the fan base, but I'll keep you happy.
Well, large suggests majority, and I refuse to say it's a majority.
Okay. Well, it doesn't. It could just be a large section. But anyway, fans have been calling for the West Ham way to be played. I'm led to believe that Sam Marin is a manager that could bring that style of football to the football club. It's exciting on the face of it. I do agree what you said and what the whispers are saying, and that there are some doubts about taking the Liverpool job. Because there's always that risk. You don't want to be the guy going in there directly after what Klopp's done. And I have heard reports that there are a number of managers that have had similar feelings that they've been talking to and discussing the potential with. So I'm not surprised that he's probably considering us because of what we've achieved over the last three or four years, the so-called projects that we've got, Big London Club. Like, it is an attractive proposition for managers to come over. And I think he does fit
really patient fan base.
Yeah. It does fit the profile of the type of manager that many would believe could take us to the next level. Now, fans always go, we want a young manager with fresh ideas, new ideas, can play the modern game. And he's certainly fit
mold.
Yeah, he fits that mold. I think we're a long way to go before we even get anywhere close to him accepting anything or an official offer being on the table. But the early signs are that, you know, there could be more conversations to be had. So it's exciting. Lopetegui, we know he's a man of principle. And like you said at the very beginning, after the way he walked out of Wolves, as much as I wouldn't mind him as the manager, I don't see a world in which Lopetegui and David Sullivan work in harmony, given the way that he left Wolves. So, yeah, I think I'd be very surprised if that was a goer. But you never know. Stranger things have happened. So, yeah. But yeah, they're two good links. Encouraging links, I think. But I wouldn't be surprised if neither were in the dugout at West Ham next season.
Well, I think, can I just take this opportunity first of all, and this is genuinely, I know, you know, one of your favourite YouTube comments recently referring to me was, is he always this smug? But but months ago, right, Amorim was being linked with Tottenham before Ange Postecoglou came in. He was one of the front runners for that job. And obviously Ange got it in the end. But this season, when we've had these conversations about David Moyes, I have said on a couple of occasions, because again, we are also always at pains on this podcast to give our opinions, but acknowledge the nuance in all opinions. Me and James have been sitting on opposite sides of the Moyes in out debate for a while now. James hid his Moyes out tendencies while it was going too well for a little bit, especially after we beat Wolves. But ultimately, we always go, but we appreciate this, and this, as in that nothing is ever black and white in life or society or football, and that there's always another side to the answer, always another side to every argument. One thing I've said all along, and I used Amorim as an example, was that as much as I love Dave Moyes, I think he's brilliant. If we are going to move on and try something else, then if it is for someone like Ruben Amorim, and he is the example I've used for months now, then I could get on board with it, right? But I felt it was too ambitious. Like, it just seemed unlikely. If you're being linked with Tottenham, and then it's not a surprise he's then being linked with Liverpool, then it felt just same with when, you know, some of our fans are going, oh, we should offer Xabi Alonso a job. It's like, screw your head on. Like, just, like, you know, appreciate the difference in scale between our club and Bayer Leverkusen. So if we manage to get Ruben Amorim, I will be fully on board with the whole project and the whole project going forward. All I would say at the moment, look, I am extremely confident a meeting took place between Amorim and David Sullivan. All I would say is we have seen on countless times in the past West Ham being linked with or having bids rejected for really, really big names in order that the fans think we're in and what ambition West Ham are showing. But the reality of those talks or of those bids or of those offers was like ridiculous, and that there's no way such offers were ever going to actually land that player or manager. Calvin Phillips springs to mind. I know it sort of seems all a bit comical now, given the situation we're in with him. But I think we put in an offer, didn't we, of 45 million quid just before he went from Leeds to Manchester City for 60 or 65 or whatever it was, like well below. And it was almost sort of universally accepted. It was just so it appeared on the face of it, West Ham in for Calvin Phillips. But and so I would just issue a word of caution, basically, that with all of these things, whatever you hear over the coming weeks or months and whatever happens with David Moyes, first of all, is that David Sullivan hasn't 100% made his mind up that he doesn't want David Moyes to be the manager next season. That at the stage we're at the moment, that's a hugely important piece of information to note. Secondly, is that, you know, you've kind of got to acknowledge where West Ham are, particularly if we're not in Europe next season. That comes with its own elements of averageness or whatever. And that what's happened in the past when West Ham have been linked, and I'll put that in air quotes, with players or managers, or talks have been held, or bids have been lodged, or contracts have been put on the table, all wording like this. And then how many of them have ended up coming to fruition? Do you know what I mean? So a word of caution on that front, I suppose. James, is there any sort of, these are more like Twitter rumors, not rumors even, more like fans on Twitter going, what do you think about these options? Kieran McKenna from Ipswich and Edin Terzic, who is at Borussia Dortmund, who was Slaven Bilic's assistant at West Ham, of course, have also been mentioned. And they haven't been mentioned in this could happen. That's more like, would you fancy these if you had a choice? Anything in those?
Kieran McKenna, interesting one, given the job he's done at Ipswich, but I would say it would be too early to make any judgment on that until you've seen him managing the Premier League.
Exactly. Totally unproven.
And then Edin Terzic, well, I mean, it would be great. But at the same time, I do have some doubts over it.
Given that he's the manager of Borussia Dortmund.
I don't think it's totally unrealistic, given, I mean, they're going to finish fourth this year, which you would put, okay, there's an anomaly in Germany this year in Bayer Leverkusen. They're going to finish fourth this year, I think, which you would say in Dortmund's eyes is a bad season, given they're normally in a two-horse race with Bayern, which they more than often lose anyway.
Well, they threw the title away themselves, didn't they, at the last day of last season?
So they've had a bad season by their own standards. He knows the club. He's worked for the club before. I'm actually shocked that he's ended up becoming a top manager with Borussia Dortmund, to be fair. But
why?
I don't know. I just never really considered him to be a manager. And then next thing you know, he's manager of Borussia Dortmund. It's just like, oh my God, he was our assistant manager a few years ago. Because he's like, I don't know. But I think if we could get him, fine. But I don't think there's much in it. I don't think it's unrealistic, given he's worked for the club before. But then the fact he's worked for the club before, would that even put him off completely? Just be like,
oh, no, yeah. That's what he's walking into, yeah.
So, yeah, maybe not Dave. Thanks for the offer, but no thanks.
You are having a laugh, aren't you?
Yeah. But I don't know. McKenna's too early. Terzic is meh. I don't know.
Yeah. No, and anyway, those were just more like, would you fancy these? But yeah, I you sense it sort of like page one, the last couple of days of a saga and a book that's going to sort of rumble on across summer. Yeah. Even though it's the sort of thing that any properly run club would just like, you'd sort of have wrapped up, wouldn't you? You'd know what you were doing. You'd be clear in your way forward and the direction you want to take the club in. And you'd start acting on that, but no strategy in place, it appears.
You would expect any club to have this wrapped up already, but obviously, as we've already said, the fact that David Sullivan hasn't made his mind up yet suggests why. But it does look like there is a shortlist in place, which they're now visiting. But this is the first two concrete conversations we've had with potential managerial replacements.
No club talks with Lopetegui, but yeah,
no club speaks to one or two managers and then makes an appointment. There will be a hell of a lot more managers in the conversation who will be having meetings with Tim Steeton and David Sullivan in the next few months before we get anywhere close to contracts being on the table. It might still be Amorim, it might be Lopetegui, but I think there are going to be probably at least 10 more names thrown at us who have had talks with the club between now and the middle of July, probably. I would go, it's a good start and it's encouraging. I've seen some go, it's just a load of rubbish. It's just trying to get people to, we're getting close to the deadline for season ticket renewals. So they're just trying to drum up some interest. I'm not being funny, but if you are a season ticket holder and you're waiting to find out who's the manager next season to convince you to renew the season ticket at the club that you support, then just don't bother renewing. I don't get it.
That seems a bit harsh.
No, it's like, don't, like, if you're a fan of the club, yes, okay, you might not agree with some of the decisions you make, but you still want to go, right? You still want to go and support the football club.
Yeah, but that's like, if we got relegated, loyalty that clubs take advantage of, isn't it?
Maybe, but if we got relegated to League Two, I'd still be renewing. Like, it wouldn't, like, I'd be like, that, this is annoying, we're in League Two. Like,
hang on a minute,
see this coming.
I said to you the other week, if you renewed that, and you said no. I said, are you going to do it this week then? And
I just haven't got round to it, but I'm definitely going to. It's a non-negotiable. I know some fans are different, and obviously, you know, there are outside factors that may, you know, depend on whether people can or cannot renew. But I would never hang it on the balance of who's going to be manager next year or whether we're going to sign a striker or not. Like, just, I just don't know. Like, it's for
we're
me.
We're classified as legacy fans, remember, mate?
Yeah, no, true. No, I mean, for me, renewing my season ticket is as non-negotiable as paying my mortgage. Like, it's just something that I have to do every year. I don't care what league
some
we're in, who the manager
will
is.
Choose between that.
Yeah, if it gets to the point where it's your mortgage or your season ticket, then completely get it. You pick your mortgage, right?
Well, no, yeah, but that those people might be saying, yeah, well, look, I'll default on my mortgage as long as Moyes isn't in charge.
Yeah, I mean, there might be one or two. But if it's down to who the manager is, then I just don't understand that mindset. If you can renew...
James, I'm telling you, though.
And you're deciding seriously whether or not to renew. If you can financially, and you can financially afford it, and you're fortunate enough to do that, but you're arming an R and over it just because you want to know who the manager is next year, then I don't know about that. I don't understand that.
Listen, the person you described then is in a different category of fan to you and I, right? That much is clear. But I don't think it's too harsh to sort of say to so. I would give you the fact that someone who, because I was going to say, I don't think it's too harsh to not renew if, or to be more inclined to renew if West Ham are in Europe or if West Ham are good, right? I will give you that those people are probably in a different bracket of fans than we are. You know, I would call us, you know, unconditional almost. Like, and I think with that, those unconditional fans are the ones who get taken advantage of the most. Really, clubs want fans more like us who just blindly go and like give them their money regardless of how terribly they run the club or what dross they serve up on the pitch. I don't think you can give people too much of a hard time for going, you know, 800 quid or whatever. It's a lot of money. Some tickets are far more than that. not many are less, especially if you're bringing a kid or whatever, like trying to bring a kid with you. It's like north of £1,000. I don't need to be too harsh on people who go, well, I'm not going to spend that £1,500 if it's dross that I don't enjoy watching.
I get that.
I will acknowledge that there are different brackets of fans. And, mate, you got to remember, right, we moved from Upton Park to London Stadium. We went from 29,000, I think it was, season ticket holders was the most we could give out. 29,000 hardcore, pretty unconditional season ticket holders at that place to, like, finding the exact same amount of season ticket holders, and we now got 55,000, almost double. With that, you can't expect that additional amount of people to have the same intensity or level of intensity in their fanhood as we do.
I understand that. I don't know.
Should we move on?
Yeah, let's move
talk
on.
About some actual football.
Yeah.
Stay with us. A brief review of the Bayer Leverkusen game, Crystal Palace defeat, next before a look ahead to Liverpool. The We Are West Ham podcast is sponsored by Miriam Errington Conveyancing in Adelaide, South Australia. So if you are buying or selling a property in Adelaide, South Australia, or Australia as a whole, make sure you keep West Ham business in the West Ham family by giving Miriam a call or a shout. It's Miriam Errington Conveyancing for all your property sale and conveyancing needs down under. Right, well, I'll start with the good stuff, I think, James. I really don't want to talk about Palace too much. I know it's the most recent game. I know we're a West Ham podcast, but I feel like we've given the most airtime this week to the most pressing issue, which is what's happening with the club going forward. So Bayer Leverkusen, 1-1, one of the most amazing first halves I've ever seen. Mikel Antonio really brave to get us 1-0 up. We were at them the whole half, you know, Jared Bowen starting, he needed an injection in order to be fit enough to play. He was so unlucky not to make it 2-0. He did really well to get on the end of it and then get it on target and low. 6 inches left, that goes through the keeper's legs, 6 inches the other way. It probably goes in the bottom corner. You can't really blame Bowen for that. And we were just at it. The atmosphere was brilliant. The atmosphere was so much better than I was expecting it to be, and that I'd given, that I'd probably given West Ham fans credit for. I was really buzzing with the atmosphere and how well everyone cheered the players on. I was really moved, as I'm sure loads of people were, by how we all stayed back to applaud, or most people did. I mean, don't get me on the people that left. With like 80 minutes on the clock. Genuinely, don't get me on those. But the vast majority in that stand afterwards stayed and clapped the players for what was a remarkably good performance. And they were remarkably unlucky to concede what was a jammy equaliser, quite frankly. Massive deflection, as I've already said. But James, go on, just briefly. We are out. We expected to go out, but... I was sort of really delighted with the manner in which we went out. Just such a shame. It all came down to, as we said the week before, really, that killer second goal in the first leg, really. And without that, you sort of sense that we could have done something special. But, with the sort of players we were bringing off the bench compared to them, bringing off Frimpong, one of the stars of their season, who scores the equaliser. And we were doing sort of, polar opposite to that.
Yeah, the first half was, like you said, but it's one of the best halves of football I've seen West Ham play in many, many years. I just took a lot of joy in seeing Leverkusen. This is, the best team in Europe right now. They haven't lost in 43 games. Just been named Bundesliga champions. And they were on the ropes. They were misplacing passes, kicking the ball out accidentally. They weren't winning second balls. They were absolutely all over the place, a complete shambles because of the way that we went at them and way we had them on the ropes.
and the fans and the wind, I think. The wind was shitting them up a bit.
We were just, it must have been incredibly intimidating for some of those players in that pitch, because it was loud in there on Thursday night. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. The second half, we knew that there's that old cliche that, you know, we didn't really want half time to come. And it came at a time where we were, you know, probably another 5 minutes and we may have got second. We knew that they were going to come out second half. The fact that Xabi Alonso is making a substitution on 30 minutes to change it tactically was just...
It was like centre-back, wasn't he? He got booked and he was getting run ragged all over the place.
Yeah, and it was like, I can't believe we're doing this to this team. Like, and second half, we knew they'd come out, they'd regroup, they'd come out a little bit stronger than they were. We looked far less likely to get a goal in the second half.
We just ran out of puff a bit, didn't we?
We ran out of puff, got to about 65 minutes, and it was, you could tell the players were knackered. Nothing on the bench to do anything.
Nah.
And then it was more a case of, right, and we were saying, we were like, right, okay, well, we're probably not going to score another. Let's just see a win out. Let's be the first team to beat this lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we came so close, and like, we know Leverkusen love an away goal. They did it again at the weekend, 94th minute.
Yeah, 97th minute, wasn't it?
Or
yeah,
whatever, 97. So like, they do it. We know that they've got goals in them in the final 10, 15 minutes of games.
That was a fluke, though.
But it was, the way it went in was so deflating, because it was like, if it was a like just a bog standard goal from a set piece, or if he'd driven it 30 yards and it had gone clean top corner, you'd have gone, all right, fair enough. These things happen. But to take such a huge deflection off Cresswell, wrong foot Fabianski, was just so annoying. So, so annoying. Because that was really their only real proper chance. I think they had one in the first half, which Fabianski saved. But beyond that, I don't remember them having an opportunity where... Oh, it's that one, I think it was Frimpong, that 5 minutes before he did score, he went through one-on-one and skied it. Mm. Other than that, like, I felt like, even though we'd run out of steam, it was almost like the first leg in the second half where we were just defensively very good.
Yeah,
and they've ended up securing it with a deflected goal. But I stayed to the very end. The moment their goal went in, a lot of people up around me got up, started walking out.
Yeah, it's rubbish.
And a couple of my mates went to go, and I dragged one of them and said, no, you stay, come on. Like, there's five minutes left. Let's stone crap this lot off, because what a night it's been. And they all went, yeah, good point. And we did. And it was quite emotional standing there. I can't remember the last time. Like I said before, I stood there clapping as if we'd won. As if we'd won the game and gone through. And it just felt, it was quite emotional clapping them. And I think the players were a little bit like, oh, wow. And they deserved that. They deserved every single moment of that round of applause, because they were unbelievable, not just on Thursday, but for the whole tournament. I think they've been incredible, even for the last few years. Just unbelievable from them. And we can say that, okay, we didn't beat them, but we gave Bayer Leverkusen two really, really difficult games of football, and they had to rely on late goals to knock us out. So I think we can take a lot of pride in that.
Yeah, totally with you, Jonesy. Bit more of a negative then, Palace 5-2. I don't know, mate. Whatever. I don't know. Like, it's just one of the things. I know you've already called it embarrassing. It obviously is. One thing I will just say, and I've sort of been almost under instruction from a colleague of mine, who's a big Palace fan, who was like borderline furious that the nature of the coverage of the game has just been how bad West Ham were rather than how good Crystal Palace were. And I'll be honest, if you watch the goals back, I know there's some, you know, particularly Fabianski won't be in a hurry to watch the game back, a couple of them, and some of our defending was terrible, Ogbonna in getting a particular load of grief. But Crystal Palace did play really well. I know we let them sort of have the run of things, like Elise and Eze in the middle of the pitch, but we played exceedingly well. And I don't really think that you can... No, I don't think you could sort of... you have to give them a bit of credit. So let's just do that quickly now, is what I'm saying. Consider that done. You can now go two-footed on West Ham if you want. But that was with the We Are West Ham podcast giving Crystal Palace credit.
Let's have it right. If you score five goals, then you've probably played pretty well.
you can't say you played half decent.
Yeah, because you still managed to score five goals, regardless of how poorly the opposition played. I've lost count of how many times we've played teams off the park, and it's always been about how many times you've beaten a top five club, and it will be about the other Man United being terrible that day, or Liverpool being terrible that day, or Chelsea being terrible that day. So get used to it, Palace fans. You're not going to score five very often, to be fair. But yeah, like, we were unbelievably embarrassing, and we've now got the worst defensive record outside the bottom three, which is embarrassing enough as it is.
We have scored like the third most Premier League goals we've ever scored as well, I think. So that's
for a team that's supposed to be defensively pretty good, doesn't make for great reading.
Well, there lies the irony, doesn't it? West Ham manager gets absolutely slammed for being too defensive at the same time as having an absolutely terrible defence.
Yeah. It's not great. I don't really know what else to say, mate. I've seen two of the goals, I think, and I have no intention of watching anything else from that game. I'm going to remove it from my memory and just forget that it ever happened. Fair play to Crystal Palace. If you want credit, Crystal Palace, well played. That's all you're getting from me.
Sorry to those of you listeners or viewers who came to the podcast this week hoping or expecting some in-depth analysis about that 5-2 defeat.
Let's have it right now. Honestly, how can you give any in-depth analysis to conceding five goals to Crystal Palace other than what a complete and utter shambles that was? If you want any more than that, then I'm sorry, but you're not going to get it anywhere, because how do you give any in-depth analysis to that? There's nothing to analyse other than we were terrible.
All I would say is I think it's Moyes has admitted that he likes small squads. One of the side effects of that will be when it comes to the end of the season, your players have played loads of high intensity games and will fatigue. The argument that because these players get paid millions of pounds, the laws of human biology and muscle fatigue don't apply is madness. So we're clearly our squad, and given the injuries and suspensions we've had recently as well, which haven't helped, it means we're just not set up. We don't have the capabilities to do the Thursday, Sunday thing, right? That's clearly what's happened. That's a huge impact. We put so much into Leverkusen in both games, and the payoff to that effort was the Fulham defeat and then the Palace defeat. The nature of it's not great. That's the third time this season we've conceded five or more, once to Fulham, once to Palace, once to Arsenal. Doing it to London rivals doesn't really help, but I don't want to talk about it anymore.
I just want to touch on those comments from David Moyes about having a small squad, because they came out just before the game, early on Saturday. They came out, or Sunday. And he contradicts himself massively.
Go on.
He says how much he loves a small squad and he prefers to work with a smaller squad. But then goes on and moans about how many games we're playing throughout the season. And he says, oh, well, the likes of Wolves and Fulham play far less than us. It's like, well, there is an alternative. There is a way of managing those bigger games, and that's by having a slightly bigger squad. So he's kind of contradicted his own argument there, going, it's better to work with a small squad, but it's annoying that we've got to play loads of games. It's like, you could make your life a hell of a lot easier, Dave. And I'll never understand what he was actually trying to argue with those comments, because it doesn't make any sense. It's similar to the Guardiola and Klopp complaining about all these fixtures they got to play.
He probably means it's just easier to manage personalities, I guess.
But in that case, then players. don't bring up the amount of games that we've been playing throughout the season. I think it's been by the time this season's finished, it'll be 53 this year. Last year it was 58. The season before, probably early 50s. We played a lot of games over the last 3 or 4 years as a result of being in a competition that we really want to be in. It's what do you want? Do you want to just not be in Europe and have a smaller squad and just enjoy the luxury of that? Or do you want to be in those competitions? And if you do consistently, then you need a bigger squad. I don't know. I just don't really understand it.
No, fair enough. Well, look, you might not have to try and understand it for much longer. sadly. But yeah, look, I mean, we'll try and do an opposition for you later this week. I know we've been, we sort of missed a couple recently, a variety of reasons. Namely, if we've been doubling up on the games in the week, it becomes a bit more difficult, and we've been let down by a couple of people last minute. So many apologies. Liverpool's always a bit of an awkward one. But James is going to do his level best this week to try and get one on board. So we'll try and have a Liverpool opposition view ahead of the game against the Reds this weekend. James, have you got anything else to say? Not about looking back. Saturday, 12:30 kickoff, Liverpool at home. How do you think that's going to go? What do you think the score is going to be? And then we'll say goodbye for another week.
Well, we do have still have an outside chance of qualifying for Europe. So it'd be nice if we could get a result. I think it's a long shot, regardless of how poorly or well Liverpool have been playing recently. They do look a little bit shaky. But the other asked me, like, if we lose to Liverpool, it wouldn't be the end of the world, because it would mean it's more likely that Arsenal won't win the Premier League. So if both teams could win at the weekend, I'd take it. But yeah, I don't know. I can't see us getting anything out of it. I think our season is going to just fade and die.
Yeah, I think. But, just like our dreams. Yeah. Right. Thanks for listening, everyone. James, what do you think the score is going to be then? Liverpool at home?
3-0, Liverpool.
Blimey. Yeah, just leave you on a positive note there. I think it'll be 6-0. David Moyes will be determined to go out in a blaze of glory, leaving everyone thinking, see, why don't we just play like that the whole time? You're in charge. Anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. An hour and 5 minutes special this week. Lots to cover, of course. Hope you've enjoyed it. We'll try and get a Liverpool opposition for you this week. If not, we'll be back as usual, me and Jonesy, next week as we close in on the final four or five games we've got left in the Premier League season, as we sort of thinly hold on to some hopes of Europe. Forgive me again. I know I'm normally sort of quite positive. It's done. We're not getting into Europe, put it that way.
Before you go, someone did tweet me in the week. I can't remember his name. I haven't got my phone. But said that if Will is even remotely positive this week, I might unsubscribe. So we may have saved a subscriber this week by you being not overly confident or finding excuses to be confident.
No. I must admit, mate, even I'm waving my little white flag. I'm glad and I'm proud of myself for sort of holding out as long as I did. But I think some things you can't really argue with. When they're right in front of your face. I was pleasantly surprised at the Bayer Leverkusen performance, to be fair, and I wasn't expecting to have any hope of qualifying throughout the whole game, but I did right up until their equaliser. But now I do very much feel that the season's come to an end, and it may be sort of the beginning of the end for David Moyes as well. I think it'll sort of be all change and a little bit doom and gloom, but yeah, I'm just trying to sort of, like you said, James, so well, I think we both put it on social media. Don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. And that is sort of the energy I'll be taking in to the rest of the season as David Moyes' tenure probably, it would appear, comes to an end. But look, thanks for listening, everyone. This is another We Are West Ham podcast that's come to an end. If you like what you hear, positive or negative, if you're pleased with our analysis or not, maybe buy us a pint if you fancy it. That's buymeacoffee.com/wearewestham. Chip in. We do, most of that money gets spent on beer. Some of it gets spent on licensing fees to host the podcast and equipment, microphones and whatever, to make it a little bit better for you guys. Me and James will endeavor to spend it on a couple of pints between now and the end of the season. We've got a couple of bits in the offing as well, things we're planning content-wise. If you fancy chipping in, buymeacoffee.com/wearewestham. Follow us on social media at @we_are_westham on Twitter. You'll find our personal accounts there as well. We're We Are West Ham Pod on Instagram. Leave us a 5-star review and some nice or nasty comments if you like on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your pod. You can email us at wearewestendpod@gmail.com. I know a few of you got in touch this week. Sorry we didn't get to any of them, but lots of other stuff to cover, as I'm sure you can understand. Liverpool at home on Saturday. If we get anything, I'll eat my hat. But me and James will be back next week to review that and any other developments in the David Moyes West Ham manager saga. Thanks as always for listening, everyone. What a season it's been. What a time it's been. What an era it's been under David Moyes. And if this is sort of the beginning of the end, then so be it. And yeah, as James so succinctly put it, don't cry that it's over. Smile that it happened. Hopefully you feel the same way about this podcast episode. Thanks for listening, everyone. West Ham are massive, up the hammers, and we'll speak to you hopefully later this week, if not same time next week.
Hi, this is Tony Cotty and you're listening to the We Are West Ham podcast.
The We Are West Ham podcast is sponsored by Miriam Errington Conveyancing in Adelaide, South Australia. So if you are buying or selling a property in Adelaide, South Australia, or Australia as a whole, make sure you keep West Ham business in the West Ham family by giving Miriam a call or a shout. It's Miriam Errington Conveyancing for all your property sale and conveyancing needs down under.
Sports Social Podcast Network.